And every week, no matter what is happening in our congregation and in our world, we light our chalice to center us, to tell us that we have begun this work of community again. This morning, we have 7 chalices up front so that you can see. You have to peer around the corners to see this 7 different chalices, so that you can see that there are at least 7 different ways to have a chalice. And those of you who have been in any other Unitarian Universalist congregation or gathering have seen some other version of a chalice that we don't have. In Toronto, Canada, they have a chalice that's about this big around. And you can imagine that they don't use a tea light for the flame in the center of that chalice. And at the General Assembly of Unitarian Universalists, which happens at the end of June every year, they have a chalice with those double hoops, which are about this high. And that also has a pretty bright flame in it. We have chalices the right size for our room. But just as there is a great variety of thinking and perspectives and hopes and dreams, there is a great variety of chalices. Some of our religious education youth will light our chalices while I tell you the story of where this chalice symbol came from. Do any of you remember this story? I ask this every spring and always resolve to tell you this story more often so that you will have it in your minds and in your hearts. This is one of the stories that comes from the Unitarian side of our lineage. And this is a story about people taking risks in the world. During the Second World War, Unitarians were working in Portugal, actually, to help get people out of occupied Europe. There was a group called the Unitarian Service Committee who was working first in the United States and then had an office in Portugal, run by a man named Charles Joy. So that's the name to remember, that Mr. Joy was at work in the world. And he was negotiating with other governments and with other relief organizations. Fire handling is always challenging, no matter the size of the flame. And Mr. Joy was in charge of a group of secret agents and messengers who were part of working with these other governments and relief organizations. And since he had to communicate with a variety of people and needed to look like he was an established organization who could make things happen, he realized that he needed a symbol to let people know that they knew what work they were about. And so he needed to find an artist, because artists are skilled at finding those symbols and those ways of communicating without words. And he found a man named Hans Deutsch. Mr. Deutsch had escaped from Paris, although he was originally from Eastern Europe. He was in trouble with the Nazis because he had been drawing pictures when he was living in Paris, making fun of the Nazis and criticizing them, and you know that they didn't tolerate that. So he himself had escaped from France and was in Portugal and met Mr. Joy. So Hans Deutsch and Mr. Joy talked about Unitarians. They talked about the work that Mr. Joy was about. Hans Deutsch brought his Czechoslovakian heritage with him. And in Czechoslovakia, there is a symbol that's similar to a chalice with a flame in it that means working for freedom and having strength and relying on the truth. So Mr. Joy told Hans Deutsch some stories of our Unitarian past about people who had sacrificed for what they believed in. And Hans Deutsch took his own past from Czechoslovakia and this symbol of a cup and fire that meant truth and freedom. And he swirled those together in his mind and he drew something that looked like a cup with a flame in it and with circles around it. And I think Mr. Ajoy took one look at that and said, ah, you've got it. And they began to use that as their official symbol, the Unitarian Service Committee, helping to get people out of occupied Europe. So they, when the war ended, they came back to the States, and they continued to use that as their symbol, this Unitarian Service Committee who had done this work in Europe. But Unitarian congregations around the country began to notice this chalice with a fire in it. And they began to say, I like that as a symbol for who we are and how we want to be in the world. And it didn't take long for almost every Unitarian congregation in the country to have a chalice with fire in it in some form. Up front, you see a flower pot that has been turned upside down and painted and turned into a chalice. You see something with stained glass. You see something that's an antique silver object with glass in the middle of it. And you see our usual one made out of a piece of a tree, hollowed out and polished so that we remember that the earth holds us. So we light a chalice at the beginning of every service, and we don't always know the story of it. And it doesn't have a specific meaning. It doesn't mean one thing. It doesn't tell you something about our doctrine or about what every Unitarian Universalist believes. But it has this story of people working for justice in the world, people who are willing to face great danger to try to help other people. It's a story of an activist and an artist putting their minds together to try to make the world around them change. So every time we light a chalice, you can try to remember at least Mr. Joy's name and maybe Hans Deutsch's name. But most of all, try to remember that this is one of those symbols that is about the stories that we tell, not about the answers that we have. The stories that we tell and what we try to do in the world for other people and for the whole earth.
Over 200 years ago, when the United States of America was still the 13 colonies, there lived a man named John Murray. John Murray and his wife Eliza lived in the country of England. They were very religious people. Every Sunday, they got up early, they got dressed, they ate their breakfast, and they went to church. Sometimes John Murray would preach a sermon and talk to the people about God. Their church was not a place to be happy. No one smiled, no one laughed, no one sang, because the followers of that religion, called Calvinism, believed that almost all the people were going to hell. They believed that God would let only a few people into heaven, no matter what people did. Even if they were really, really nice and tried really, really hard to be good, they still couldn't go to heaven, no matter what. And so the religion in that church was a very serious business, and the people were expected to be very serious too. But one day, John and Eliza Murray heard of a man named Mr. Relly. Mr. Relly was of a different religion, a religion that said that people didn't have to go to hell, a religion where people could be happy. And finally, after talking about it for weeks, John and Eliza decided to listen to what Mr. Relly had to say. So the next Sunday, they got up early, they got dressed, ate their breakfast, and they went to Mr. Relly's church instead of their own. At that church, people smiled, someone actually laughed, and when it came time for the sermon, Mr. Relly got up to preach. And he said, God loves all his children, God doesn't have favorites, everyone in the universe has the chance to go to heaven and be saved from the fires of hell. Salvation is universal. Mr. Relly was a universalist. And after hearing his sermon, John and Eliza decided that they were universalists too. But the people at their old church weren't universalists. Mr. Murray, they said, very stern, have you and your wife been going to see that heretic, Mr. Relly? Yes, sirs, we have, answered John Murray. And do you believe such nonsense, that all people have the chance to be saved? Yes, sirs, we do. Mr. Murray, they said, appalled, you mustn't say such things. Yes, said John Murray, I must. And they said, oh, no, you won't. And he said, oh, yes, I will. And they said, well, you can't say them here. You and your wife both have to leave. So poor John and Eliza Murray, none of their old friends would talk to them, and they were lonely and sad. Then Eliza had a baby, which made them happy for a while, but then the baby got sick, and Eliza got sick, and John had to borrow money to pay the doctors. He borrowed more and more money and went to more and more doctors, but they couldn't help, and his wife and baby died. And then he was arrested because he couldn't pay back the money he had borrowed. So there John Murray sat, all alone in a cell, with no job, no money, and no family, and no friends. He decided that he had failed God, and failed his family, and failed himself. And he decided he was never going to be part of a church again, and he decided he was never going to preach again, ever. After a few days, Eliza's brother paid the money that John owed, and so John was set free. But he wasn't happy in England anymore. He wanted a new life in a new land. And he bought a ticket on the sailing ship, Hand in Hand. The ship had great white sails that were filled by the wind, and the wind blew and blew. The wind blew John Murray all the way across the Atlantic Ocean, far away from England and to a new land. But the wind blew John Murray to a place he hadn't planned to go. He ended up in New Jersey instead of New York. The Hand in Hand stranded on a sandbar off the coast, and the sailors couldn't move the ship because the wind kept blowing them into shore. Because there wasn't much food on the ship, John Murray climbed out and waded ashore through a marsh. And near Barnegat Bay, he met a farmer named Thomas Potter, who invited him into his house and gave him supper. Now, Thomas Potter also believed in a loving God, and he believed in universal salvation. He believed in it so much that 10 years before John Murray had showed up, he had built a church all by himself. And then he sat waiting for 10 years for the right preacher to come. And now the preacher was here. But John Murray didn't want to preach. So Thomas Potter argued with him and talked with him and prayed over him. And still John Murray said, no, I swore I would never preach again, ever. But Thomas Potter said, I believe that the wind that brought you here to my door was the breath of God. I believe God sent you here to preach in the church I have built. I believe that the wind will never change until you have preached to the people a message from God. Tell me, sir, if that wind does not change by Sunday morning, will you take that as a sign from God himself that you should preach again? John Murray thought about it, and finally he said, I will. The wind blew, and blew for days, and it kept the boat from leaving the shore. The wind didn't change, so on Sunday morning, on the 30th of September in the year 1770, while the wind was still blowing, John Murray got up early, got dressed, ate his breakfast, and went to church. And he preached. He preached in the church that Thomas Potter had built, and he preached of a loving and caring God. He preached of universal salvation, the idea that all people everywhere in the universe could go to heaven and be saved. He said, you possess only a small light, but uncover it. Let it shine. And afterward, when people came to him and thanked him for his sermon, John Murray changed. He changed his mind about joining a church again, and he changed his mind about being a preacher. In 1779, in the town of Gloucester, Massachusetts, John Murray became the minister of the first organized Universalist church in America. He traveled and preached in many places in the United States and became known as one of the founders of American Universalism. The church that Thomas Potter built doesn't exist anymore. It was torn down years ago, but Universalists are still there, Unitarian Universalists now. And if you go to New Jersey, there on the shores of Barnegat Bay, you can stay at a special Unitarian Universalist retreat center named Murray Grove in honor of John Murray. the man who decided to preach again and to let his light shine.